Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 148 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
First, feedback for episode 208. First up is Pat.
Hi, Ginger. Hi, Summer. This is Pat from Denver. Just finished listening to your podcast, The Fox's Lair. I'm calling about little Tommy Baxter, I think his name was. That is Mrs. Fitz's grandson from the first season, the one that Claire got in such a big fight with Father Bane and made him go to the witch trial and everything like that. And also, that was the Shark Jump episode. Diana had posted that somewhere on Facebook. And as far as Larry being there, who cares? You know, we know what's going to happen to her, us book readers, eventually. So, you know, here today, gone tomorrow. Okay? Thanks. Bye.
Pat, that was awesome. You're absolutely right. And we got to say, Summer and I were laughing listening to your feedback because... I said, I mean, kind of jokingly, because we're not perfect. We're human. So things are going to be getting things. We will get things wrong. Either totally like say something that is incorrect or say like we did in this case. I don't know what that was. I forget. That was something, but I forget. So
so many messages. We got so many messages.
Feedback in the form of here.
Our listeners
know everything.
Are much more observant and remember back to season one much better than we did, because I wasn't, my brain thought it had to be somebody in France.
That's what I was thinking.
Right. I was convinced it was a season two reference, and that's why I wasn't thinking back far enough to season one to remember that there was any other character with a name that she saved.
But you guys let us know on Twitter.
Every last one of you did.
On Facebook. You let us know.
Emails.
You let us know. It was awesome because what that means is that you guys care. And that's what I like, because first of all, you're helpful, right? I mean, you will correct us if we get things wrong, too. We totally get that.
As you
but
should.
But this was something that we totally, like, slipped our brains. So the fact that you guys care, you didn't just go, eh, they missed it, whatever. You know, I can't believe they didn't remember. You guys cared enough about the story and about what part of this story, even though it was the adaptation and not the books, to let us know. So it means a lot to us that you guys care enough to reach out. And it wasn't just like right after our show came out. It was like literally all week up until today. I think we got tweets today and we're recording this Saturday just as the East Coast airing is happening. Next up is Jean.
Hi, ladies. Ginger and Summer. This is Jean calling from Maryland. And I wanted to leave some feedback on the podcast from Outlander. The episode with Faith was just a work of art, I think. The scripting and the acting, just beautiful. I thought that Katrina's portrayal of a mother who had lost a baby was amazing, considering she's not been through that. I unfortunately have been, and I was just in awe of her skill in acting that. So that was just an amazing portrayal. I just was really looking forward to that episode over all of them because of how she and Janie had to surmount the challenge of that and come back together. So I really also enjoyed your interview with Tony Graffia. And I think the other episode that she said she really wanted to do was the last episode of the season. So I'll be looking forward to that one too. And I'm sorry to have to go back to the first episode, but I never got to call and comment. I didn't hear anybody say anything about the transition from time periods. And I thought it was really effective how the hand reaching out from Frank ended up being Jamie's hand and how that reflected the poster, the promotional poster from the first season of Outlander. So anyway, I just love your podcast. I look forward to them almost as much as I do the shows because it's so much fun to hear people reveling in all the details and the beautiful characters and story and costumes. So thanks so much for what you're doing, and looking forward to next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jean. Absolutely. You know, we appreciate your comments about the first episode as they did the transition from the 40s the 1940s to the 1740s. Yeah, we love that as well. When we saw it in the theater at the premiere, we're like, ah,
it was magic.
Everyone was like applauding and there was hooting and hollering. Jamie. Well, because they went almost half an episode with no Jamie. Mm-hmm. So I think by the time we did get Jamie, they were very excited. But, you know, the series didn't make them wait nearly as long as they made as Diana made the book readers wait to get Jamie back in their pages.
Oh, the Whiplash. Sorry, not the Whiplash.
Well, it is the Whiplash.
Oh,
but I mean, it was like
60 or 80 pages.
It felt like half a book.
Most of the book is, well, no. Most of the book is the 18th century. But yeah, we really appreciate your comment about 207, Faith, because for that episode, I think a few weeks ago, we had another listener who had a somewhat similar experience. She lost her baby shortly after it was born. And that's anyone who has gone through that. I mean, our hearts obviously go out to you, but anyone who has gone through that and calls in to share that type of thing, you guys are amazing. Because I don't know if I could ever, you know, call in anywhere and share anything like that. Not that that's not worth sharing, but because it's so difficult to talk about. And thank you so much for your kind words about our show. I'm glad that you look forward to the series more than our show, because that's how it should be.
I look forward to the series more than our show.
That is
so
true.
There's
me too.
There's no reason that you shouldn't as well.
Absolutely. Next up is Cindy.
Hi, this is Cindy calling from the Worcester, Massachusetts area. I called before. I was the one who said that Gaelic sounded like garlic with the Boston accent. I called because I was thinking of you guys this week because the scenes with the old fox and how he didn't have his wooden teeth. And I know one of you, when we were doing the read-along, said that you wanted to see him take out his wooden teeth and put them on the cake plate when he got so mad about, I forget what he got mad about, but probably indecision between people. And I just was like, oh, he didn't take out his teeth. That's sad and disappointing. The other thing is, for those of us who did the read-along, we know what happened to Colm during his visit to Castle, and that didn't happen. And I'm just wondering if, like, when they get back to Castle Leoc, are they going to open the carriage and be like, oh no, what happened to him? The other thing I was wondering is, Starz came out and said they were changing their original programming to Sunday nights instead of Saturday nights. And I was wondering if that is going to affect you guys at all and your night that you, because you usually put out your podcast on Sunday. I was just thinking. All right. Maybe talk to you later. Bye.
So Colm was never at the castle in the book. So
you mean Old Fox Castle?
Yeah,
got
he was
it.
Never there. So he
was at a different castle in the book.
He was at a different location in the book.
Yeah, a castle.
Was it a castle?
Yeah. Look, woman. That sounded like a cat. I did not sound like a cat.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he was never there. That was a scene he was never part of in the book. So his upcoming, the things that are going to happen to him next in the book, that happened in the book, never happened there. So they could still happen. They're just not going to happen there. We might have to happen off screen. I have no idea what they're going to do. I'm kind of excited to find out.
That is interesting. That, I think, is one of the okay. It's all positive that we have a series, so I'm not talking about that. But one of the exciting things, maybe not as exciting as seeing stuff from the book, right? Obviously, because we're huge book fans. When we see like lines and scenes directly from the book, it just like melts our hearts and we just, you know, go crazy. At least I go crazy. But then when they change something or adapt it or leave something out, and you know they have to get to a certain point because they're not screwing with, in general, they're not screwing with the storyline, because if they do all the books, which we hope they do, and so far they've committed to 4, which is pretty huge because the books only get bigger. So, which is,
I wonder
whole,
if they'll be combining the
other,
two of them though.
Whole other, that's an interesting thing. That's a whole other conversation. But,
okay.
But definitely something worth talking about. So we're getting more books. We're getting more series. And we know that at least with the open-endedness, right, of them potentially having even more books and series, mm-hmm. they have to stay on the straight and narrow at least for the major storylines, at least for the major things. Because as Diana has said, as Meryl has said, if you screw something up royally, I don't mean something where the fans go, that's not the way it was in the book. I don't mean that, right? Like, oh, she didn't wear that kind of dress, or oh, whatever. If something is done really wrongly, and it can mess with later books, like whole storylines, yes, the book fans will be upset or, you know, tweaked or whatever. But you can shoot yourself in the foot, because to have to correct something later on down the line is much harder than tweaking it only a tiny bit or not tweaking it at all. So I'm not talking about that, though. My point is they have to get to a certain goal, right? In each book, in each part of each book. And they are. So even with adaptation, they're sticking to the storyline. However, one of the most exciting things that we do see is that when they do make a change or make an adaptation, like Summer mentioned, like with Colm, he totally didn't from the book. He wasn't there in the book. This did not happen in any way like this. But it now becomes, as they've said, as Ron has said, he wants to keep it fresh and exciting for the book readers too. And this is one of the ways that they make it exciting, I think, is that I agree with Summer. I'm actually looking forward not to just to see my favorite book finished on screen, but to see what they do with this. Does what happened to Colm in the book end up happening? I mean, the end has to happen, but does it happen the same way? Even though they change a little bit in the middle here, does it happen in the same way? Are they going to bring him to the place where he was in the book? You know, now I'm curious to look forward to see how they handle that. That's to me the exciting part about the adaptation. Number one, that fans have their hopefully favorite series on screen with amazing production in every single capacity. But also that when they do make changes in adaptations, it's exciting to see where things lead and how they do it with twists and turns.
Well, and how they're able to course correct.
That will have to wait till next season. Yes.
I'm just saying. It's the evolution of the series.
It is.
How they get back on track. Or if they do, or if they totally jump off the rails and stay off the rails, which is their right to do. It's their adaptation. Looking forward to seeing how this whole thing plays out.
Next up is Heather.
Hi, ladies. This is Heather from Michigan again, calling to give some feedback on episode 208, The Fox's Lair. To put it lightly, I thought this was the worst episode of two seasons. I am so disappointed in some of the creative choices they made in this episode that deviated from the book. And I'll say I've generally been really, really happy with the adaptation and have really rolled with changes, recognizing fully that some things that work on the page do not work on the screen. That being said, none of the choices here made sense at all. Even my husband, who is not a book reader at all, when we were done with the episode, he looked at me and said, "You look furious." And I said, "I am furious, but that was terrible." And he said, "Yeah, I didn't think it was very good either, but I don't know why you're furious." So I explained. I'll start with just the beginning at Lallybroch. I felt like it did not do a good job reflecting how long they were at Lallybroch. I mean, Jamie and Claire are back at Lallybroch for 6 months, 8 months. I mean, it's a good period of time. It didn't do a good job at all reflecting that time period of how long they'd been there. And, you know, for example, even the small things like them saying Jenny and Ian had another baby while we were gone. There wasn't enough time for them to have another baby. Kitty is born. The baby's name is Kitty, by the way. You guys were talking about that. She's Kitty. They were talking about that as if like they'd had her when she was gone, but Claire delivers her at Lallybroch. They could have just said, shortly after our return, you know, Ian and Jenny welcomed baby Kitty, something like that. Would have been fine. And because then later, Jamie, when they're talking about how Claire has changed things, you know, and how, for example, Louise will have Charles, you know, Charles Stewart's baby. That baby would already be born at that point when they're talking. Like, just the continuity I felt was terrible. And then, not to ramble on too long, everything you guys said about Leary and young Simon, everything, absolutely dead on. None of it worked. It was awful. No one wants to see that character. No one wants to see her redeemed in any way. And if their object was redeeming her, they didn't even do that because of the snide remark she made at the end. It was really bad. I'm really disappointed. And as you guys said as well, if this wasn't the jump the shark moment that Diana mentioned, then what is? This has to be it. And I can only hope that next week it gets back on track and improves again, or else I'm going to be really, really disappointed. Thanks for listening, guys. And I'm curious what everyone else has to say about this. Bye-bye.
So, Heather, tell us how you really feel.
No, really. Don't hold back.
She didn't.
Just let it all out.
I like that. No, I like that. And see, the thing is, she gave her very definite opinion.
Well, and she cited reasons. I mean, it's not just saying you didn't like something.
But you don't even have to cite reasons. We hope you do. But she did it. You could tell a little bit of stress in her voice because she was aggravated.
She was passionate about something,
but it was with respect because of her love of the story, and it was done. It wasn't done with any malice. It was done with passion, but I didn't think it was insulting in any way.
No.
So thank you, Heather. We understand. We do know that adaptations are different, and we do our best not to overly compare. To observe and notice what the differences are because it's fun. We love that. But so we completely understand. Next up is Beatriz.
Hello, girls. My name is Beatriz, and I'm speaking from Brazil. None of my friends are acquaintance with Outlander, so it used to be a very lonely time after the end of an episode or even the end of a book. But since last week, when I discovered your podcast, I'm having the most wonderful time. Now it feels I have room to share all the things I'm in love with this story. Anyway, I just wanted to thank you for the great work you do here, and I can't wait to hear you guys in the next episode. Many kisses.
Beatrice, that was probably one of the sweetest calls we've ever gotten. You didn't even reference an episode. You were just wanting to let us know that you found us. You're happy you found us like a week ago. I mean, bless you for that. That's so awesome. And one of the things that I can't speak for Summer. One of the things that has touched my heart from the very beginning is I know there are a gajillion fans, book fans, series fans, etc., from America, from the U.S. and from Canada, from the English speaking world in general. And I know the books are translated into many languages, but when people, even the U.K., I mean, the U.K., yes, they speak English, but you know, they're still overseas. When we have international listeners get responses from people overseas, it just makes me so happy. It just tickles my, I don't know what, it tickles my happy place. And that doesn't sound very good. But thank you so much for your very sweet call. And we hope you will call back and listen forever and ever. Next up is Chantal.
Hi, Chantal, calling from Ottawa. And providing feedback. You asked, I'm a book reader, so my feedback is from the book reader point of view. I love everything that they do with this series, but I have to admit that this was not my favorite episode. I read somewhere that Outlander suffers from an excess of plot, and I have to agree, this episode, and often many, many episodes, are just jam-packed full of plot, and it just feels like they're just trying too hard to cram it all in. I'm not a fan of the Leary storyline in general in the TV show, so I didn't like Leary in this episode either. I wish they had gone for the more subtle Leary, but they have to do what they have to do. I don't like the Claire as the witch, Claire as the seer. I really didn't like that. I felt that the Jamie character in this episode knew what they were doing. I feel they plotted. I got the sense that they've plotted to try and fool Lord Lovett, and it obviously sort of worked. And I just didn't like that. I don't like Jamie as being so strong for the Jacobite cause. He was more subtle in the book, and I wish he was more subtle in the show. One thing that I do think is nice is the subtle touches that they slip in that you don't even notice, like the French books. I'm reading book 5 now, and in that book, Jamie talks about how his mom was very well read and how she loved to read French books.
You know, what I love about our listeners, or just people watching the series in general, is that not everyone's read the books. And I almost enjoy hearing both sides about that because, and honestly, part of me is a little jealous of the non-book readers because they get to experience it with no expectations. But these books have been out so long that for those of us who have read the books, it's hard to imagine a time when we weren't aware of the storyline at this point. I mean, we're talking 20 years now. So I don't know. I'm a little jealous of those people, but for as many book readers as there are just as many book readers who maybe didn't dislike the last episode. I just keep talking to the ones who did. And so Chantal, I'm totally on the same wavelength with you as far as this is concerned. Again, not my favorite episode. Looking forward to seeing how they course correct, or if they do.
I agree, Chantal, about the little the nice touches that maybe aren't that obvious with the French books. I love it because obviously it harkens back to France. It harkens back to their, even though they're at this highland, not even a state. Yes, they're kind of landed, and he's a laird, you know, but it's not like an English lord or an English duke or anything like that. So they're higher up in the highlands, but not hugely high up in Britain, I guess you could say. But for all that, and Jenny didn't go to school, right? She wasn't sent to France. Jenny wasn't sent to some convent school, but they both speak French. So somehow she had that education. And I like what having those French books implies. It implies education of some level. It implies worldliness of some level or some kind. It implies literacy, which again is a certain level of class in those days implies that a family had enough money. It implies that a family likes to read about things, whether it's about other cultures or just reading through the medium of French or from through whatever language to read stories. It's their entertainment. It's what they could do. So yeah, I like those small touches. I think they're very special. Next up is Deborah.
Hi, it's Deborah from New York City. I have to say, the whole time they were in Paris, I wanted them to be in Scotland. Now that they're in Scotland, I kind of miss Paris. A few things. Colm. Why was Colm made to look so unkempt? His hair was a mess. He was very unlairdly-like. He always carried himself like the powerful and important man he was. So I don't understand why he looked the way he looked. I don't know if it was to communicate that his health is going downhill. I don't know. I just found it strange. But I love the exchange he and Jamie had when they said goodbye. They have a mutual respect and love for one another, even though they disagree. Then the whole jumping of the shark with Leary. I heard Rondi Moore say that they brought her back because of what does happen later on. But for me, the fact that in the book you don't hear anything about her until later on made it so much more impactful when she does eventually appear. Why is the preamble even necessary? And Fergus on the Mule was awesome. Fergus in Scotland was awesome. And it was just great to see you guys on the Facebook Live thing, and I look forward to more of those. So see you soon.
So my thoughts on Colm. Reasons he could have been disheveled. I have two main ones that I can think of. First being they sent Leary as his housekeeper. She's probably not the best person to do that. I wouldn't trust her to keep me looking well. Two, I'm wondering if maybe it's a power play to try to come at Lord Lovett either on or, you know, to make him feel more comfortable. Maybe he's trying to appear to be maybe a little less. I'm wondering if he showed up and was putting on too many airs, if it would be off-putting and not. Because if he's trying to get Lord Lovett on his side, maybe he's trying to not, I don't know, to be same level as him, or I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. Point is, I wouldn't let Leary touch my clothes. The only thing I can think of as to why he was disheveled, as you said, or not put together, is perhaps because they had Leary in charge of him. Miss Fitz should have sent someone more equipped.
I have heard or seen, and Kenny say this in the behind the scenes for the episode, and then you say, Deborah, that you heard or saw Ron say the same thing, that they did something with Leary in 208 because of what happens with Leary in the future. Now, by that, I'm thinking that they mean season 3, book 3. And I agree with you. Because we don't see her from the time from Leoch until she does come back, because, I mean, he's kind of given it away that there's something with her in the future, so we can at least say that. Because in the book series, she disappears, right? She's off screen, off page, a lot of time, until something happens later on. I agree. It is extremely effective because you're like, what the holy mother father, right? You're pretty freaking...
Only you would say that.
Okay, me, just me. But I was like, not quite whiplash, but just as effective. You're like, there's no bloody way. Okay, so the same thing may absolutely happen. They may absolutely have kept that in the future. And by future, I mean book 3, not 20th century. But I think the reason that they think they have to, quote unquote, had to do something with Leary in 208 or thereabouts because of supposedly something happening in the future. I think the reason they felt that is because, and this is one time where it could have been right, what we're talking about, it could have been a lot simpler. I think if they had not changed it from the books, they wouldn't have had to, quote unquote, do something now because of something coming up. Unless they don't think the viewer is smart enough to be shocked at that thing coming up. And believe me, if you have not read the books, you'll be shocked as hell if they keep it the same way from here on out. Now, my best guess, or actually
it'll be even more shocking now because maybe. He knows.
See, that's why I think that would work better in the books.
It's not, he's going to have a lot more explaining to do.
Oh, Lord. See, we can't say much more. So basically, I think the reason they felt they had to do something because of what's coming up later is because they made that change. In the books, like I said, like a million times in our discussion of 208, in the books, Jamie has no
flipping clue that Larry is involved with Claire's involvement in the witch trial, with her going to Cranesmere to see Galus, with her arrest, with her trial. I mean, obviously, someone alerts him that she's there and he goes and gets her, but he does not know a ding-dong thing about Leary's involvement. And so by them changing that, I think that's why they felt they had to do something. Now, I don't know necessarily why, because like Summer said, not just his knowledge, but the fact that they've hit on it so much in 208. I guess you could go that way, that it's going to be even more shocking. I guess it could be, it definitely will be more shocking because he knows. So I don't want to spend too much more time on this because I've gone on. But man, it's just I'll say my fallback. It's very interesting what they did. And Fergus on the donkey, loved it. Fergus in Scotland, oh my gosh, baby Fergus.
I just don't know why they couldn't have given him a full-size horse.
It was
adorable. He had a giant one in France.
That's true, but it was adorable.
It was cute.
And your comment about our Facebook Live video, thank you. That was so sweet. It was so last minute. And I mean, not like literally last minute because we thought about it during the day.
Right.
But it came to us when we got the announcement. We're like, heck, we have to talk about this. And so thank you so much. We're glad you enjoyed that. People seem to send us a lot of floating laughies, floating likes, floating hearts. It was very kind of you guys. And if you like that, we'll do more. It's good practice. Because
if you
then,
don't like it, we'll still do more.
If you don't like it, we'll still do more. So we'll get better so that you will like it. Either way.
And Ginger won't be startled by the floating hearts and smiles and
that'll
fingers.
Only happen once. It's done. And finally, Michael.
Howdy, Ginger. Howdy, Summer. This is Michael from Shawnee, Kansas, and this is my feedback for Outlander Episode 208. And I only have one topic for this episode, and that is Leary. As a book reader, I'm not particularly fond of Leary, and I question her motives. And people who only watch the show may have a similar opinion. When the first meeting between Claire and Leary occurs, and Leary is tearfully begging for Claire's forgiveness, I was suspicious at that moment. I didn't know if she was truly genuine or not. And by the end of the show, we realized that maybe those weren't real tears. Maybe they were crocodile tears. Now, I will say that they were not alligator tears, because gators are much too sophisticated for that kind of behavior. As for this encounter between Claire and Leary being the moment the show jumped the shark, I would say read the interview at ZapDoIt.com with Diana, where Diana describes it would have been better if they had Mrs. Fitz there, and also described that due to scheduling conflicts, they could not get both Mrs. Fitz and Leary there while they were recording, filming at the castle. The point about your podcast I want to bring up is one I think you missed, and it has to do with the beginning of the episode when they received the mail, and you pointed out that one of the things they had received was from Aunt Jocasta. What I think you failed to mention is who Ian encountered that gave them the mail, and that was someone Aunt Jocasta would be disappointed that you forgot, Hector. I am happy to be the catalyst during your podcast for a minute or two of giggling, mostly on the part of Ginger. And I thank you for those bonus points because I think I could use them. I have a milestone moment coming up this month, one that I actually happened to share with J.J. Abrams. And did you know, in addition to being a movie director and producer, that Mr. Abrams also composes music and that he collaborated with one Lin-Manuel Miranda for the music in the cantina scene in Star Wars, The Force Awakening?
Duh, I knew that. Not only did I know that, they did a ham for ham, a live ham for ham outside where they actually sang the song.
I'm just going to butt in and say, of course Summer would know this.
Where they actually sang the song, which I think it's called Ojaba, I believe is what the song is called. But it is a song that they've written completely in whatever the name of that language is, I don't recall. But of course I know that. They totally worked on that together. And it's actually online somewhere. You can see it and you can download this song on iTunes if you're interested. I don't know why I'm pushing that, but I love Lin-Manuel. And did you know that he was just cast in they're making Mary Poppins like a number two?
Dude?
I don't know. He could. I have no idea.
Know.
I didn't
You know, he could be a brand new character because it's a sequel.
Yeah, it's a return. Like Mary Poppins 2, The Return. I don't know.
That dude.
He's so freaking talented.
I can't even... Yeah. So basically, Michael did the first Hamilton reference, indirect Hamilton reference of the night.
It was going to happen.
Oh, it'll probably still happen because I'm involved here.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So you're right. They did mention Hector And I think we hear a little bit more about Hector books from now.
Oh, for sure.
He's fun. Good time.
Show.
If we get all the books.
And now we will move on to our episode discussion, in which we discuss episode 209 entitled Je suis prêt.
First, I just want to say, will the real James Frazier please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up. Hot diggity dong da dang. The real Jamie Frazier has arrived. And hallelujah.
I'm real disturbed by what just happened in front of me.
Bad, bad rap.
I mean, I think you've literally been listening to too much Hamilton at this point.
That was not Hamilton. That was
No, it wasn't.
Eminem.
But that was good rap. Hamilton is. And what you did was
not.
Oh,
I'm not good rap.
I'm just saying, listening to good rap is making you think you can do any rap.
No, I don't think I can do any rap.
You did it anyway.
But it has nothing to do with Hamilton. I was thinking about the real Jimmy Fraser, and then that rap line came up. Okay, came into my head. A lot of people I've read on social media, in our new Facebook group, by the way, which we'd love for you to join, outlanderpod.com/group, where we continue the conversation about all things Outlander. I've heard, mostly read, because it wasn't in any of the comments we have, obviously, because the episode is not, we don't have feedback for 209 quite yet. And that is, a lot of people, I think more so in season two than season one, although I think we heard it and read about it in season one. Now, I don't have a problem with this because I know that we're seeing in the book, it's completely 100% from Claire's POV, right? At least in Outlander. Dragonfly and Amber kind of changes around a bit with at the beginning and the end, right? Or is that 100% through Claire as well? It's a little change.
So far, it's been through Claire.
The book.
No, the book is not through Claire.
Okay.
Because the beginning portion, it starts with Roger, does it not?
I think so. Okay, so we get different POVs. In the series, we get different POVs. How do we know that? Because Claire's not in every scene.
This is true.
So a lot of it is through her eyes. But I think one thing I've heard from both seasons, more so for season two, though, is that they're not writing book Jamie. Now, fair enough. It's not book Jamie. It's adaptation Jamie. But I think part of the thing, and I have to always remind myself of this too, is like, oh, that's different from the book. Oh, that's different from the book. At least even his character. It is slightly different. But I think the reason it seems so different to us, to those of us who have read the books, is that because we are only getting, I wouldn't say, Jamie's not one-dimensional, but we're only getting Claire's Jamie, right? We're not getting anyone else's Jamie. The series shows us a lot more of Jamie. And yeah, it's going to be a little bit different. But number one, it's adaptation, right? So it's not going to be identical. Number two, it's a lot more POVs. So I think that's something to keep in mind. However, with this episode, manajama. I mean, I read this too, and so I know I've absorbed some of it from you guys. But this was like, Jamie, come home. It was pretty stinking awesome. And now on to the opening title.
I really worry about the things that go on inside of your head.
And this is why we don't do that live video. Wait, my head or the way they come out?
Well, it has to happen inside of your head before it can come out.
Not that quickly. I mean, it comes out pretty right when it happens.
I know. I'm just saying I would not want to spend an evening in your head.
It's actually fun.
It doesn't feel like it.
So the opening title, as the music of the opening credits fades into the opening title, it sounds like men with deep voices singing or humming some tune. The image is of German tanks rolling through the mud. Now, I'm first reminded of the music of monks, like some kind of chant. I'm not sure that's what they were going for. I don't think so. I think they were going for men on the march, right? Men marching to battle, singing some marching song or something. Mm-hmm. Like battle humming, that might work.
Battle humming?
I don't know.
That makes me think it's like a competition, like Battle of the Bands. We're battle humming.
Again, like Hamilton, they are riding through the Scottish countryside, and we find out they're on their way to Crieff. And I first thought, the Outlandish Gathering 2015, the one we didn't get to go to, the one that Mandy went to just before we met up with her in Scotland.
The timing was just not right.
It was not. Men are disappearing, we find out. They are deserting. Young Simon has gone. Young Simon is sent to try and get them to return with the promise of land once the war was over.
He's not the person I would send.
Maybe he's become more convincing since the last episode.
I mean, if they were sending him to convince people to take their vitamins, he would be somebody I would send.
No.
As someone who looks like he needs to take vitamins.
You don't send someone who needs to take vitamins to convince others to take them.
You do. You say, this is what could happen.
He's the before. You either send only the after or you send a before and an after. He's not a vitamin person. He's not going to convince people to take him.
No, but
unless it's out of fear.
He should be the this is what happens when you don't.
I still think you send out the one who has taken the vitamins or has the tan at least. So they were all to meet up in Perth to join the prince's army.
That almost sounded like you were saying Paris with a lisp. Parath. Parath.
So at least at this point, there's no Edinburgh yet. So we're canceled. Is that funny to you?
The more I say it, the funnier it gets. Listen, Parath. I'm saying Paris.
Parath. Yeah, I get it. So they're not in Edinburgh yet. They make some training camp. They meet up with Murta.
I missed him.
Me too. Is this the point where he winked when they all met up? It was so cute. Murta winked, I think, at Claire at some point. I loved it. The men are bedraggled, and they are severely untrained. Lord Lovett, quote, remains neutral. Yeah, right.
Well, they're farmers. Of course they're untrained.
I love the reunion with Fergus. He says, Milor, Milor. He's like, it's been horrible.
He meant his socks.
And right about here, when Claire walks off with Fergus, the singing in the background. Doesn't it sound like the song that Gilbertija was singing in the episode of The Gathering? The Woman of Balnain is very, 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 very haunting. I loved it. So that's one of the first things that sets Claire up as that the lost woman, right? The fairy woman. The one who's out of her time.
Yes.
At the same camp the next day, I love the flying of the Saltair. They meet Angus, Rupert, and Dougal again, and Wee Willie has, alas, been married. And their mourning is like a death. He married an Irish... Sorry.
Dude, when they said that, everyone looked down. I was like, what happened to Willie?
I know, me too.
I got really nervous.
He married an Irish lass and sailed off to America. So it kind of was like a death. Probably would never see him again.
Hey, it means he survived Culloden.
That's true. Dougal! And here lies the conundrum. How will they handle what happens in the book? So they brought up Colm, the two of them, and now Dougal seems to be on his own with his merry men. It's not surprising he wants to fight, since he's a Jacobite through and through. But at this point, he does not have Mackenzie troops. So that'll be interesting to see how they bring that back.
It's true, but can we talk about the fact that he literally showed up with two men? He brought almost no one with him, but then he presumes to go in there and still try to lead. So I'm like, dude, you couldn't even get anybody to follow you enough to join them, but you want to show up and take over James' army? Jamie's army? I just thought that was interesting. I mean, not out of character for Dougal, because he's used to leading and doing his own thing and being higher in the hierarchy than Jamie, but he needs to cool it. This is not his army, not his troops, not his circus.
And they talk about, they refer to Wentworth and say, how many redcoats were there at Wentworth? 300? 400? Oh, that's right. 500. Yeah, no, not so much.
No.
Because he's trying to say, look, we were very few men comparatively. There were like 500 troops. No, there weren't.
No, but there were still only like five of them to get in there to get Jamie back.
But they had a whole heck of a lot of cattle.
That's true.
Cattle help. Not maybe in Culloden, but cattle help.
I keep thinking you're saying colonic. Cattle do not help there either.
Don't help with colonics. Ugh. Have you ever had a colonic?
No.
Would you ever?
I don't know. I haven't given it that much thought. I know people who have.
Do you talk to them about it?
I have talked to them about
it. What do they say?
They enjoy it, I guess.
Enjoy
they feel better
it
afterwards.
Okay, that, or enjoy the effects.
Sure.
Okay. Jamie welcomes them all. They are needed. And their hearts are definitely in the right place. Speaking of the men, the new recruits, who are severely untrained, as I said. He says, quote, they did a march. They walk, stroll, caper about, but they did a march. They'll need to learn.
When Murta is trying to teach them the whole thing, and then the bagpipe started to play, I thought to myself, that all kind of sounded the same.
And then when you hear this, turn left.
Right, and it was like, burr.
And then when you hear this, turn right. Like, I would have been dead the first day. I'm like, I consider myself very aural, and I would have died.
It would have been real hard to pick up what he was lying down.
Jamie decides to stay put and have the men train there. So that's where they stay. They dig in the camp. Now, Claire's not really digging Dougal. Not that she ever has, but she's really not having it with him. I love the Saltair with the Fraser clan motto. It's just beautiful. And I wonder if this is authentic to history or if it's something that was done for the show. Either way, I love it. It was beautiful.
That was like a well-loved Saltier as well. It was not like, it was not like a, no, it was a little tattered.
It's a sign of a good Saltier.
Exactly.
Sergeant Murta. Yes, sir. They certainly are ragtag. The troops, the men, the dudes. They have problems forming two lines. It's so comical. They do a good job with that. As Murta yells, "What's the matter with you? Have you got shite in your ears?" Claire has her first combat flashback of the episode. I love the juxtaposition of World War II and the fighting setting here.
What I loved about it was the journey of Claire during the I guess not really modern day, but her modern day war experience. You saw her being cheerful and upbeat and comical almost, and, you know, really energetic and open to meeting new people and things like that in the beginning of the episode. Whereas as the episode goes on and, you know, you can see her building a relationship with these men and then the horrible things that happen to them, you could see that's she just her as a person and as a character just completely shifted.
And it was like the two timelines were opposite. In the 20th century, she started out, like you said, open, and she ended up like scared half out of her head.
Fetal. She ended up fetal, yeah, is what happened.
And in the 18th century timeline, she wasn't fetal, but she was brash, cursing. She cursed more in this episode than I think almost like a few F-bombs. She doesn't do that all the time. So her language was crasser. She was impatient with people. She short-tempered. She was easily spooked, easily scared, was much more scared. And then as it went on, it did get worse. It didn't get better right away. But in the end, it got better with her agreement to stay with Jamie. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't exactly opposite, but it was in a way. And from the end to the beginning, in both, it's almost like she switched places. So because of what she already been through in the 20th century, that's where she starts, because she has flashbacks to that stuff, that place, that horribleness. And then it does get worse because of she's getting more flashbacks. But in the end, she ends up better than she was at the end of the 20th century, at the end of that ditch, in that ditch. So Claire again has a flashback of two young American soldiers, this time playing baseball in World War II, when she sees Fergus playing, was that field hockey?
Shinty.
Ah, shinty, that's right. I should know.
Shame on you.
I know, with two other Scots. Now, such is her aversion to the memory and the will to keep him safe. We see what happens to those two young Americans, of course, later in the episode. She is so intent on keeping Fergus safe that she bodily removes him from the situation. So she's not only affected by what she went through, she's reliving it in a way. And this time she's making the changes that she feels can be effective in the here and now. She didn't have that, I guess. When she saw the people, the Americans playing
baseball,
she wasn't afraid for them because that was their free time, right? That was their fun.
It's almost like she had a rosy or a rose-tinted view of what war was in the beginning in her flash forward back, because it's forward in time but back for her. At that point in time, I think she'd been sheltered from the horrors of the reality of war. And, you know, for her, if she spent most of her time in the camps, they were predominantly safer than the rest of the war zones. She was not generally in the war zone where the people were dying. They would bring the people that were dying to her. So the place that she was in was a very safe place. And then once the entire, you know, whatever happened where they had the car accident and they got shot at and all the people died, then it's like her idyllic place and the place that she felt safer was gone. Her trying to keep Fergus from being playful was her attempt to keep him from thinking that war is fun and that it's anything but the reality of war, which is people are about to die. And there's, you know, I know that in war situations, the men are like, find the joy, find all those things where you can, because you don't know, you're not promised anything past this. But I think she's trying to be more realistic about it and doesn't want Fergus to think that it's fun to be a soldier or that it's fun to play and be, you know, play at war, because war is serious business.
So more training, prepping the musket shells. Is that what they were doing with the, was it those, that paper they were kind of turning into cones, and was it filling with powder?
It's possible. I don't remember that.
Gunpowder. They're definitely getting ready for the broadsword, the dirk, etc., as they're being trained. Beautiful weather, by the way. They lucked out and took advantage of everything they had. Have I ever told you, Summer, how beautiful I think Scotland is?
I was really hoping that was going to be about me, but it wasn't.
Well, we're not talking about you. We're talking about the show in Scotland.
Have you ever told me that you thought Scotland was beautiful? Like a cajillion.
Like just never.
Like, no, you don't. You hate it there. You're never going back.
I hate it. I don't ever want to live there. I don't ever want to travel there again. Oh my gosh. More lies have never been told ever. I can't even keep a lie.
I don't even
want
to sit this close to you when you're lying like that. Someone's going to strike you dead.
It's ridiculous. That was totally a lie. And I may have to take that out. So later that afternoon, at the same training camp site, men sitting around the fire. Dougal is still keen. Myrta does not have a lot of confidence in the men yet. Dougal makes sure that, yes, Jamie has the prince's ear. Claire has another flashback when Angus is spitting out some food. She thinks back to the same two American soldiers who were asking her about the food at the mess hall. One of the Americans utters a J-H-R-C. And I wonder
and
if
now
that's...
we know where that comes from.
Exactly. Yeah. I was about to say, I wonder if that's where that came from.
Well, you remember in the books, she said that that was one of her favorite sayings, and she got it from being a nurse in the war. So one of her patients, I think, cursed like that. Or maybe not one of her patients, but one of the soldiers cursed like that around her.
And it would make sense that it would be an American.
Yeah.
Because of Roosevelt.
It's true.
So, if so, we love that. Either way, we love it. But and then he mentions the K rations, or shit on a shingle. And I, of course, had to look it up, even though he explained what it was. So a K ration was an individual daily combat food ration, which was introduced by the United States Army during World War II. It was originally intended as an individually packaged daily ration for issue to airborne troops, tank corps, motorcycle couriers, and other mobile forces for short durations. The K ration provided 3 separately boxed meal units, breakfast, dinner or lunch, and supper or dinner. And that is from Wikipedia. So this conversation is after D-Day, we find out. And that was June 6, 1944. And it's interesting that episode 209 airs June 4th, 2 days before the anniversary of D-Day. And these two soldiers were separated from their unit. They were airborne. So a little tiny bit about D-Day, because I know a very small bit about World War II. But it's always good to refresh my very meager memories of whatever I've heard about it. During World War II, the Battle of Normandy, which lasted from June of 44 to August of 44, resulted in the Allied liberation of Western Europe from Nazi Germany's control. Codenamed Operation Overlord, the battle began on June 6, 1944, also known as D-Day, when some 156,000 American, British, and Canadian forces landed on 5 beaches along a 50-mile stretch of the heavily fortified coast of France's Normandy region. The invasion was one of the largest amphibious military assaults in history and required extensive planning. Prior to D-Day, the Allies conducted a large-scale deception campaign designed to mislead the Germans about the intended invasion target. By late August 1944, all of northern France had been liberated, and by the following spring, the Allies had defeated the Germans. The Normandy landings have been called the beginning of the end of war in Europe. And that is from history.com.
And that just makes me think of the beginning of Saving Private Ryan.
Oh,
with that beach landing where literally almost everyone gets killed on the beach.
Man, you got to imagine those people knew that they were first. They knew that it was, they knew it. They knew they were going to go. I mean, ugh. Claire tells the Americans she doesn't really have a home. And this, I think, is another reason why Sassenach is a good term for her. She says to them, quote, anywhere but here, unquote. Now, home for her, later on in the books, we find it, we find out in the books at least, is synonymous with Jamie. Now, it's not a spoiler to say we know how season 2 ends, since we've all seen episode 1. But if we take this one step further, we can see that she is more of an outlander when she returns in the 1940s than when she is here with Jamie in the 18th century. So they talk about black pudding. They were asking her what black pudding was. You tried black pudding, right, Sam?
I did. It was very
interesting.
It was interesting. Well, I am trying to remember
what it tasted like.
Yeah, because I had it with scallops, I think. So it was. I have a hard time differentiating the flavor of the two. I vividly remember haggis because I've had that lots of times now. But what I will say about black pudding is that it doesn't look very appetizing, but it tastes fine. Like, it tastes good. But I think in general, things that are blackened to that degree make you think they're going to taste burnt, but it tasted fine. I enjoyed it when I had it. I do remember seeing a recipe for it in a book once when I was in St. Andrews forever ago. And in the recipe, like, it called for a lot of blood. I was thinking to myself, I don't know that I ever actually need to eat that. But I got braver and I tried it the second time I was in Scotland, and it actually was pretty good.
Black pudding has never crossed my lips, and neither have scallops, and neither shall either of they ever.
Quitter.
No, I'm just never a beginner. You can't quit something you haven't started. So one of the Americans recognizes her George Bernard Shaw quote. I thought that was really nice. So that night in their shelter, which is much more shelter than they had in the book, and the book was like tents. So I remember after the commando raid and Jamie comes back, she's in a tent because the tent, she's afraid the tent's going to like fall apart because some not general, but some guy, from some army guy shows up there. And she's like, he's like, we got to go, Sassenach. Okay, so Jamie asks Claire if she's all right. He's been noticing that she's going through something. And it seems everything she sees is a potential trigger for some memory. She sees Jamie's running stag brooch and picks it up. Je suis prêt, of course, the episode title. Now, this triggers a memory of the airborne patch of the American soldiers. I am ready. Jamie says he's sorry for bringing her there. The setting and blocking of this scene gave me major deja vu. Remember when they get to Leah and she's brought in her shift dress? And Jamie's comforting her. He's there with his wounded arm, wounded shoulder, and he's comforting her about her dead, lost husband. The time where, quote, something comes up, unquote, and she's sitting on his lap as he's comforting her, and they're in front of the fire. In this scene as well, he's comforting her. Now, at that point, he doesn't apologize for bringing her to the castle, but he is telling her basically he's sorry for the loss of her husband. She's out of sorts in both scenes. He's comforting her in both scenes. She has her hair down in both scenes. And they're in front of a fire in both scenes. To me, that was a parallel. She had just come through the stones and was missing her life and still shocked and having to come to terms with where and when she was. And here, she's beginning to come to terms, because she says at the end of the episode, she buried it, right? In that ditch. After that, she had to basically bury that experience. She put a lid on it. And that's why here, when she's around all the war prep, it's that lid is being taken off bit by bit until the end when it explodes off. So I see those also as being parallel scenes. And here we have the Jamie and Claire theme, of course. Da, da, da.
Though, if you ever watch this with closed captions on.
I thought you were about to say, if you ever watch this with clothes on. Every time. Thank you.
What's wrong with you? Why would you do that? Just
watch them with clothes?
Take them off. Be free. You're always talking about how hot it is in here. Take it off.
That's why I have ice pads. I mean, my ice packs in strategic places.
Anywho, point being, if you ever watch the show with the closed captions on, they don't say it's Jamie's theme. But what they do is they have
music notes?
They have music notes, and they say things like, I wrote these down last night because they were cracking me up. Somber music. Lively music. Serious music. Intense music.
Okay, we need to like package these up and send them to Bear. That is hilarious. Like, Bear, did you know that your music, you know, granted, if you can't hear, you can't hear. So does it, I mean, saying Jamie and Claire's song doesn't, or theme, does not help you. I get it. So I understand the descriptors, but that is kind of funny.
It's true.
But you could say like lively music, sorry, somber music, Jamie and Claire theme. You know what I mean? You could at least let the person know that it's a theme. They don't have to hear it to know that it's
they're
a theme.
They're never going
to
hear it.
I said they don't have to be able to hear it to be able to appreciate that someone's gone to the work to make something that is actually working with the story. Okay. Of course, she says she's fine. The next day, I believe it is, and the weather isn't as sunny. It's smoky from the fires and there's a bit of fog or mist. Now, Myrta is running the men through their exercises. Jamie sees that they seem to not be taking it too seriously. And he jokes with them, uses their camaraderie, and then gives them a come to Jesus moment when he recounts his time in France. How he grew up really fast, and how those musket balls don't joke. As he says, quote, an entire line of men raise their muskets. All I can think of is, raise a glass! As Jamie is bringing them to Jesus, he says, quote, "It takes discipline. It takes a well-trained soldier," etc. And he turns around and is haloed by the sun through the clouds. It is a beautiful moment. I don't know if that's on purpose. Exactly. But King of Men, indeed.
Now, for the book readers, pretty much all of this training happens off page. So all of this, you know, kudos to Matt Roberts for writing this, because he had to basically invent all of this. Like, almost none of these scenes and none of the flashbacks to Claire's time in the war. Some of that was inferred by things she said along the way. So, I mean, he had to really delve into these books and look for instances that she talked about or thought about these things happening, because, I mean, there's everything that he talked about that he showed in this episode, I should say, fit in with the timeline of the books. Mm-hmm. But almost none of it actually happened on the page for us.
Then at this poignant moment, when Jamie is convincing them and giving them their talking to, Dougal and his merry men come running the Highland Charge half naked, covered in mud. Now I, Ginger, will own it when I am wrong. I was wrong here. The frontward half-naked man wasn't Jamie, as I thought it was. This is the scene that's in the opening.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. I thought that too.
Hot diggity. It was Dougal, and there you go. And they scare the crap out of the men who were learning how to stand in line. Jamie is seething. And man, I had a huge flash right here of Jamie from the book. It was so awesome, because Jamie's not taking any crap. Jamie pulls Doogie aside and gives him a tongue lashing.
When did he go to medical school?
Before he came.
Doogie Howser.
If he's going to fight for Clan Fraser, he's going to listen to Jamiekins.
And he should. It's like I said before. I'm like, dude, you brought two dudes with you. Sorry, three. You brought three dudes with you.
Give him credit now.
Clearly, I should not give myself 33%
more than you're giving him credit for. You're undercutting Doogie by 33%.
You're undercutting him by more than that by calling him Doogie.
That's my thing. That's my right. Me and Doogie have an understanding.
Well, and me and Doogie have an understanding that he only brought two men. What's the name of the third one?
We never learned. And if we did learn, I forgot it. I didn't write anything down. But it was definitely three people.
Did you recognize him? Was he a person you've ever seen before?
He had like blonde or light brown hair. It was like someone I didn't recognize. Yeah.
Yeah, forgive me. All I saw was Angus and Rupert. It's all I cared about.
So that afternoon, I think, it's in the shelter. It's wherever the people go in to be under a roof. It's Dougal and Claire. And Dougal says Jamie is struggling and needs help. He wants Claire to help and reminds her of their agreement in the cave and her promise to be his bride if Jamie died. And she tells him, yes, I tell Jamie everything. We share everything. And Claire gives Dougal a lesson in Greek mythology. And that was about Narcissus. And I know we know the story, but I thought I would look it up, even though she told us so. He was the son of the river god Cephisus and the nymph Liriope. And if I butchered that to my classicist friends, I apologize. He was proud in that he disdained those who loved him. Nemesis noticed this behavior and attracted Narcissus to a pool, where he saw his own reflection in the water and fell in love with it, not realizing it was merely an image. Unable to leave the beauty of his reflection, Narcissus lost his will to live. He stared at his reflection until he died. Narcissus is the origin of the term narcissism, a fixation with oneself and one's physical appearance. And that's from Wikipedia.
He didn't lose his will to live. He lost his will to do anything to take care of himself, because looking at that image became more important to him than like eating.
I see what you're saying. Lost his will to live is like, I can't take it anymore.
Right.
And he's just like, yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's like, I can never leave you.
I'm not arguing with Wikipedia though. But I know Wikipedia is
shame on you, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia is not the be-all, end-all.
No.
But for general things like this, it's likely not wrong. But again, if you're a classicist or you just know your stuff, let us know. If there's a better, I'm sure there are better references for different subjects. So there's a better reference for Greek mythology than Wikipedia. Absolutely. But this is quick and dirty. And then Claire brings out the big F-U. Hot dang. She tells him F-U. Dougal wins, though. Sorry, Claire, because she misunderstands the one thing that he has, or that he is, that Scotland means more to him than anything. It even means more to him than betting or wedding her. Go on with your bag sale, Doogie. Back outside, more training. Beautiful shot of the sun. The background music here sounds like what Bear was referring to in his tweet. It was Gryuger, something like that. He says, quote, the brilliant at Ghettocraft, which was the Twitter handle of the Gryuger, the singer, I believe. He says, the brilliant at Ghettocraft provides a haunting new voice to Outlander in episode 209, singing the Jacobite anthem, Moch Savadenya. Okay, I just butchered that. Let me know how I butchered it, or let me know how to say it better. Aga, I don't think you're listening, but if you are, you can let us know. You can let me know. And then the shot of the weapons held up in front of the fiery cross. Jamie and Murta discuss how Claire is having issues. And Claire is definitely, we all can see, having a hard time. Back inside the shelter, Claire tries to help Angus with his nasty feet. She is trying to tell him about Trenchfoot. And she flashes back to World War II again, where she's teaching soldiers about the same. She's upset that Angus is not taking it seriously. She drops another F-bomb. Dang it. Homegirl is having a rough time. She walks outside to get some air and hears the sounds of battle from World War II and the guns of the Jacobite Rebellion. With a training for the fighting. That night around the fire, Dougal brings new recruits. Jamie is sitting at a makeshift desk with candles and writing materials. Ross and Kincaid were the two men who were on watch, and they were the ones who let Dougal through. Jamie says they are to be whipped. The next day, Dougal's guys are, quote, volunteers. So Jamie asks them, were they volunteers? Not so much. Dougal has a point, though. If they don't conscript as they travel, they'll just keep losing those that desert, and they won't have an army, really, to offer the prince. But he didn't ask Jamie, and Jamie does not agree with his ways. Jamie orders Dougal and his men to take over sentry duty for the entire time they are encamped. And he says it like, this is an order. And Dougal's actually quite happy with it. He's like, that's fair. Cool. Gotcha. Jamie has Murta whip both of the men who were on duty, who let the boys come in, the people come in, and the new people, the new conscripts come in with Dougal. And Claire's watching this. And later on, Claire's walking by them practicing their shots. She has another flashback to World War II and the ride with the men who were killed in that Jeep. She and one of them end up in a trench to protect themselves, and one of the others was injured and unable to reach the trench, and he was screaming, help me. Now, how awful that must have been to hear for anyone, but especially for Claire, a healer and trained nurse. It must have torn her insides. This is going to sound awful, and I know the Germans were the bad guys in World War II, but when I hear German in any film or series, it makes me happy because I can actually understand what they're saying.
Well, and I did write down that they actually did a pretty good job. I thought they had really good German accents.
And they may have been Germans. We don't know.
They may have been.
So here's the translation.
I've heard a lot of bad German in movies, though, over the years.
Oh, no. Well, yeah. So here's the translation, an approximate translation, because some of it, if I heard it, what they were actually saying, I can translate it directly because it was very simple. But some of the stuff, I could not even make it out. Not translated. I couldn't make out the German.
Yeah. And unfortunately, in the closed captions, it just says German. Oh, German speaking.
That, you're kind of letting me down, closed captioning. Okay. So this is what it was. Something, something, there's a corpse or there's a body. And then watch out. And then there they are. And then something followed by mit dir. Now, it doesn't make sense to me, but if it is mit dir, it's the informal you, and it means with you. So I don't think they were using formal. No, they weren't using formal. I think they were using the third person plural, which is Z. But anyway.
There's your third guy.
Okay, so this guy in the trench with Claire tells her to stay put, and she does. Now, is this why she never stayed put after that? Because Claire learned the first time she was ever told to stay put, bad things happened. People got killed and she ended up in a trench for at least a night. And after that, when Jamie tells her to stay put in that little glen in the beginning of season one, she does not stay put. I mean, I'm kind of making a joke, but I think it's pretty funny.
I don't think that's why she doesn't stay put. I think she doesn't stay put because she's obstinate and she does her own thing. But she did stay put and it didn't help her.
She would have died.
Right. But had she not stayed put, it wouldn't have.
So more German. This one I got very clear. I think it was like, da sind sie.
Schon wieder. Gleich hinter. Die Moya.
Yeah. Summer's quoting my Elisabeth favorite German. My favorite German language musical, Elisabeth, das Musical. The German was, they are there. And then followed by gunfire. So poor Claire, afraid for her life and freaking out, sad that the men are hurt, says, of course, not so loudly that any Germans would hear her, but she says out loud, please shut up. Now, how much it must have hurt her to say that, but at this point, that's what she wants. It's hard for her to hear someone knowing that she cannot help them. And well, she doesn't want anyone to die, but she's like, please shut up. Just die already.
It was
just
a combination already. Of that. And I think she didn't want his cries to bring them any Germans. Closer.
So she stays there in the trench for how long? Is it like just the night and she's found the next morning? I mean, we don't know. Some Americans end up finding her. And of course, as we see in this episode in the 18th century, she's got PTSD. And then we flash immediately to Jamie and he's caring for her. She still carries the guilt from that experience.
Well, yeah, I said PTSD. She's got survivor's guilt. Mm. But I think that book Claire, and this is one of the differences I've noticed between in the show and the books, is that book Claire is a lot better at compartmentalizing. And she's a lot more no-nonsense. Like, I think that Claire of the series has that ability, and she does it from time to time. But Claire of the books was just like, this doesn't help me now, I'm putting it away. And I'm going to work on what's happening right now. The rest of this, I can worry about that later. But right now, I need to focus on this. And series Claire is not as good at that.
Yeah, so I definitely see a difference in series Claire as I see a difference in series Jamie. So that's fair. So Claire brings us back to the human side of this upcoming war. But Jamie says that she'll go to Lallybroch. Claire will not be separated from him. She's done that. She's been helpless before in that ditch. Besides being able to stay with Jamie and help out where she can with the men and the wounded, it will help her heal this part of herself. And then our beautiful shout out. Thank you so much, Mappy Roberts, to my favorite book. Quote, listen to me. If I go back, then it will just be like lying in that ditch again, helpless and powerless to move, like a dragonfly in amber. Except this time, it will be worse, because I'll know that the people out there dying alone are people I know, people I love. I can't do that, Jamie. I won't lie in that ditch again. I can't be helpless and alone ever again. Do you hear me? My favorite simile ever. Yeah. Also, did anyone else get a little tear prick when she says dragonfly in amber? Just me. Just you. Now, whatever music that is under them right during this scene, it is just gorgeous. It does not sound like their theme, but it is gorgeous. Now, that night or some night later, outside the campfire, a young boy.
Did you say campfire?
I may have, but it wasn't supposed to be German. It just came out oddly. So a young boy tries to cut Jamie's throat.
Now,
it's baby.
This Hooray. Is, I know. Now, this is different from the books. In the books, I think that aren't Jamie and Claire kind of getting, they're having a heated tiff. Discussion or a tiff out in the woods, and he overhears it because he hears her Englishness juxtapositioned against his Scottishness and makes the jump that she is a captive. And when Jamie walks away from the campfire to, I think, wasn't he going to like go to the bathroom or something like that?
It could be that Claire was more involved than she was in the book as far as attracting him, but I think it still was the fire. The fire attracted him, and I think the voice may have done more. But Claire
was the reason that he even tried to intervene. Claire was the reason he would never have approached this circle of men if Claire hadn't been there. He was his only
yeah, so
reason.
That's a big difference.
His only reason, and that's one of the things he's held against Claire. When
John.
Yeah.
Sorry, can't say that. Gray?
Yeah. Later in the books, he talks about it. When he first comes up with her again, he holds that against her because he's like, I would never have gotten my arm broken if I'd known that you were. And granted, she still did the whole thing where she pretended to be held captive or whatever.
That was different.
But it was different.
And I don't really think I liked it.
Yeah. But she still, but that was her choice in the series. And in the book, Jamie did that to her.
Exactly.
So, but he always held it against her for being there in the first place, because if he hadn't heard her talking,
he would never have gotten involved
and he would never have, you know, gotten and given away all of the secrets of the other men and everything else.
So this young boy tries to cut Jamie's throat. Jamie, easily gets him down and ends up breaking his arm. And I wrote in all caps, yes, all the wows, we meet him. Yes, yes, yes. Sidebar, whenever we meet someone new, even though this will not be the same actor we have in future books, I get it because he's a little older. Anyone time we meet someone who's in all the rest of the series, it gives me another tear prick. Holy heck, why does this series capture my heart?
I know, but this will be we met two actors this season who we will probably, well, one of them for sure we'll only see this season. We may see young Fergus again next season in flashbacks. But this will be it of
new characters?
Oh,
for this season?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those two characters, we probably won't see them in this form again.
No, yes, but we haven't met the non-baby Bree.
No, we haven't, but it doesn't matter because
who we see is going to be who we
right.
see. Right,
she's going get. To be who is the, that character I for the rest the baby of the season.
Was it for that yes.
series.
Yes.
But
it makes me a little bit sad. I know,
that's what I'm saying. This is Roman's? Roman yeah. Bell, whatever, however you say his name. This is his big season. Like, he yeah. may have some flashbacks in the next season, but this is the meat and potatoes. You're not going to see much of him after the season. Same thing with Lord John or John Grey or whatever his name is in this
William,
excuse me. He will not be this age again. So this actor is going to have
again,
to soak
unless
up.
There's a flashback.
Right.
Which there may be.
There may be.
So what a dramatic entrance for William Grey. He's 16, but just a bairn. He's got a letter addressed to the British officer, not a spy, but he saw the light of the fire. He recognized Jamie as, in the darkness, as Red Jamie. Okay, I'll have to suspend my disbelief that he recognized someone in the dark from a poster.
Well, and do you know how hard it is to tell the color of someone's hair in the dark?
Even far from a fire.
Even in a fire, but even in the firelight.
In a fire, it's on fire, girl. Yeah,
then it's all the same color. But even in the firelight, it's hard to tell color because everything's kind of muted and altered by the light. And even every hair color looks different in the dark. But when it's dark and pitch dark, everything is black.
That's true.
So
Jamie starts to do the knife thing, heating it up, and then Claire comes in and tries to help. Baby Gray's entrance is different than the books, meaning the reason he got there, right? Why he was attracted.
Yes.
And Jamie starts to do the knife thing, which is from the book, but doesn't do it. So, okay, they went not even maybe a quarter of the way there. And then Claire uses her Englishness, but of her own volition here. In the book, it is totally not of her own volition.
No, she was an unwilling participant.
Which to me is more effective.
Well, it was definitely more effective to Jamie's.
Book. Yes, yeah. Because she's like, what the? And it played more to John's.
Right.
Played more to Baby Gray's fear.
That she was
the reason
an
why
captor,
he came. Yeah, exactly. So Claire uses her Englishness to get the boy to cooperate. Now, in the books, it doesn't quite happen like this, as we said. She's convincing, but he doesn't open her dress and expose her boobles.
He didn't. But screen Jamie and screen Claire are the worst actors ever. And I'm concerned about the people around them and how they take them at face value every time. And I'm like, how can you not tell that they're lying?
Ugh. I love how Murtaugh is grinning from ear to ear this entire scene. He's just like, okay. Now, Baby Gray, second son to Viscount Melton. He's with 200 infantry traveling to Dunbar and General Cope's army. He tells them, Baby Gray does, that they have 16 carriage-mounted cannon, muskets, and 30 cavalry. They are 3 miles to the west. Now, in the book...
Did you say cavalry? Cavalry.
I wrote down cavalry. They have 16 carriage-mounted cannon, muskets, and 30 cavalry. They are 3 miles to the west. In the book, Jamie did the whole heart-head thing with the gun. Like, remember? Where do you want to be shot? Heart or head? And I think he said heart. And then he does the whole, I give you your life thing. But here, he doesn't even do the gun thing. So he just does the knife thing and says, go take him out. If what he said is right, tie him to a tree. If what he said is a lie, slice his throat.
He's like, hopefully you're right and all your mates are this close and then they'll find you.
And then he says, I give you your life. Either way, they used that here and Baby Gray was not happy. He says, quote, "I owe you my life. I should greatly prefer not to. But since you have forced the gift upon me, I must regard it as a debt of honor. I should hope to discharge that debt in the future. And once it is discharged, I will kill you," unquote. And Jamie replies, "Then I must hope, sir, that we do not meet again," unquote. Baby Gray replies, quote, "A Gray does not forget an obligation," unquote.
And that's straight, like,
almost legit.
It's like Game of Thrones. A Lannister always repays their debts.
Dougal's men let the boy get through the lines, and Jaime's fire, so we find out how he got there. So he got through Dougal's men, and it was Jaime's fire that attracted him. Also, partially, as we said, partially from the book. And then Jaime says that he's going to be whipped because of his part. It was his fire. He's taking responsibility. And he takes a total of 18. I count it was 6 plus 12. When he de-shirts, holy monkey balls, his trapezius muscles. Goodness gracious. He looks, I don't know if it's like because of like the dingy light or because of like the not so much light, but it's like he grew into like a small Hulk.
I'm sure it's just makeup contouring.
How do you make him pop? They go to take care
highlighter?
Of the government troops. Not in the dark.
It's not totally dark.
It was a lot dark.
Well, yeah, then you don't need nearly as much. You just highlight with shading.
Still later, some of the men are covering their faces with soot, but Dougal is not allowed to go. And he seems a little bit insulted by this. His punishment is to stay behind. Now, Jaime truly looks scary here. Is someone... all of them with the soot on their faces were a little bit scary. Now, just like in the books, they remove the wheels from the carriages and the pins and take them back to camp to burn. Now, Jaime gives the pins to Claire almost as a souvenir. That was just funny how he was like, "Here you go, Zazanach," and threw him on the bed. He comes home to Claire, as I said. Claire's in bed, and he's all covered in soot. He tells her he's been doing a commando raid. Here, the Jaime and Claire theme appears. And besides telling him what they did, he's basically like, "Yeah, I would like nothing more than to take you right now, Sassanach, but let's go. We got to get moving." She's like, "Really? You wake me up, like scare me, and then we got to go? We don't even have time to like fiddle fart?"
There's always time to fiddle
fart. That's what I'm saying. So on the march later that day, this is the song, the one that Bear mentioned. It's very moving to see these men on the march, isn't it? They've come up on the prince's camp, and we see a wide shot of it. And Jaime sends Dougal ahead to announce their arrival. Now, I think this is a sign of a good leader giving others a chance to be part of the glory, of the more glorious task. And he knows that to Dougal, this will mean more than to most. And now, no turning back. Claire ends the episode with a "Je suis prêt," whether they truly are or not.
I'm not ready.
For the end of the episode or for things to go the way they're going to go?
Not the end of the episode. I'm definitely not ready for the season finale. It's getting closer and closer.
We have a month.
I know we have a month, but even knowing we have a month, I'm not ready. But I am ready for Voyager because that's my favorite book. So I'm excited.
Getting excited, y'all. Oh my gosh. So one of the listener feedback, I think it was one of the last ones, mentioned our Facebook Live video that we did this week. And you can find it. We'll leave it up. We'll leave it up on Facebook. You can find it there. You know, it was fun. We'll definitely do more, as we said. But we did that on World Outlander Day when they announced seasons 3 and 4. And the first post I did, because I didn't see Twitter, I didn't see anything. I saw Outlander TV News, Sarah, our friend Sarah, with her blurb on Facebook mentioning Voyager. I didn't even see Drums of Autumn. I just saw the season being renewed. And I thought, oh my gosh, Voyager read-along. That was my first thought. Not the series, but the read-along. I was like, holy crap. So I shared that and I put, "Our Voyager read-along is a go." And then, you know, everybody hit the fan with everything. So we'll ask, please no spoilers, but we'll ask just for funsies, and don't feel the need to put these in your voice recorded feedback comments, because we really do want to keep our voice feedback from our listeners to the previous episode, because we already get so much goodness from you. We don't want to add more to that right now because this is extra. But tell us on Facebook, tell us on Instagram, tell us on Twitter, email us. We don't care. Tell us what you're most looking forward to from the... We're going to keep a little bit narrow with them, what they gave us in our Voyager read-along, or from Voyager in general. If you want to use a spoiler, email us.
I'm fairly sure they're all going to say Prince Shop.
I, Summer, yeah. I mean, most people, yes. But yeah, let us know. We're so excited. Oh my gosh. Someone very, very, very kindly said, aren't you guys excited? You have your Voyager read-along coming up. And it's like, you know, if you guys want to take a week off or so after the finale, we understand. I'm like, it might be more than a week because first of all, we have to prep. Second of all, we have to do the feedback for the last episode, which comes in the next one, which we would put on the top of any episode we did. We may or may not take a week off. We don't know yet. But there's other stuff in the end of July.
So I don't even know that we can afford to take that time off because I was reading online that there's been hinting that Droughtlander might not be as long as we think it will be, which means we would have even less time with what is arguably a longer book. So that being said, we may have to get right into it because unfortunately, until we have a premiere date for season three, which we're not going to get that for a while, we don't really know how much time we have to do the read-along. So we can't really budget it out and say, well, we can do two at a time here, two at a time there. Because as we know, what happened with Dragonfly is that we thought we didn't have enough time. And so we were putting them all together. And then all of a sudden we knew exactly how much time we had. And then we had to slow it down and do one chapter at a time, even though some of these chapters were like 3 pages long. So it's a give and take. We're just going to have to pry, maybe just, I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to have to talk about it, but I'm severely looking forward to Voyager.
And you know what we may do? I was thinking about this, and we haven't talked about this specifically, so this is going to surprise Summer when I say it, especially in front of y'all, because I would hope to leave this in. We've kind of teased, and it may have been in the video. I don't think it was. We kind of teased at how much fun we had at that video, and wouldn't it be fun to at least do a small portion at the beginning of a podcast recording on Facebook Live? Just a small one, like 10 or 15 minutes. That might be something exciting. And I'm not saying we can't ever do it before then, but that might be something exciting to do as we, like, for the Voyager read-along kickoff.
I mean, I'm open to it.
So we're getting closer to the end of season two, my favorite book, and closer to beginning our Voyager read-along.
Which is my favorite book.
It is. So thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/outlanderpod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.